issues in Nedarim. And it's clearly the case that whether by Minig, and maybe it's mostly by Minig, but certainly from that perspective, that the notion of Hataras Nedarim seems to loom large in Tishrei, or right before Tishrei, the beginning of Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, Erev Rosh Hashanah, and up to and including Yom Kippur, there is a big focus on some type or another of Hataras Nedarim. Again, this is not something which is clearly, explicitly in Shas, and in fact, the whole nature of what is and isn't explicit in Hataras Nedarim is itself a fascinating discussion. But as a matter of practice, so many of us are noheg to do Hataras Nedarim before Rosh Hashanah and or Yom Kippur. And on Yom Kippur itself, the night of Yom Kippur, the opening event is Kol Nidre, which is itself a Hataras Nedarim, which may come as a surprise to some people. Kol Nidre is such a dramatic opening event for Yom Kippur. If you had to ask someone just to guess what it's about, and Kol Nidre is something which is very prominent in the popular awareness, and it's something which has been depicted in popular culture many, many times, something which is well known outside of observant Jewish circles, but the content is not necessarily so obvious to people. So if you'd ask the average person who may be aware of Kol Nidre's existence what it's about, so they would assume that it's a powerful prayer about tshuva, about repentance, about growth. And the fact is, it's not, as far as we can tell, about the tshuva or repentance, nor is it a prayer. It is an act of Hataras Nedarim, one that has been very controversial both for halachic reasons within the Gaonim and the Rishonim. Again, it's post-Talmudic in its practice. But among the Gaonim and the Rishonim, it took on great controversy and also created great controversy for the Jews in general because, as you can imagine, it creates the impression that we don't take our commitments so seriously. And that fed into a lot of anti-Semitic stereotypes. And it led up until the 20th century in European courts, some European courts, Jews were sometimes asked to take an extra oath in court in order to establish that they actually took their oaths seriously because of this perception that's connected to the idea of Jews getting up in synagogue and canceling their oaths every Yom Kippur. So that fed into a certain anti-Semitic impression. And in addition to all the other mistaken points here, should first clarify that Kol Nidre was never about interpersonal obligations. Somebody had committed monetarily to someone else, so no one would think that Kol Nidre would undo that, but it's about more personal obligations between you and God. But still, nonetheless, even that is a little bit difficult to understand and was a cause of a lot of controversy. So I'll try to talk for a few minutes about the role of all of these aspects. Kol Nidre, to go into all the history, would take a long time, but just to get a general overview. So first of all, like I said, there was controversy among the early Svarim, the Gaonim, and the Rishonim, about whether it should be said at all, in light of the fact that it does seem to outwardly and inwardly compromise our reverence for Nedarim. And we know that al pi halacha, we take Nedarim very seriously. We know that the psukim at the beginning of Parshas Matos tell us that lo yachel devaro, that there is an iser to make one's word chulin, to profane one's word by not taking the commitment seriously. So much so that the Gemara also tells us that we're hesitant to take Nedarim in general. And that even one who takes Nedarim and fulfills them, according to one opinion in the Gemara, is deserving of criticism, maybe because it's such a delicate thing to begin with, and we don't advise getting oneself into the situation of possibly violating another. So it's a tricky endeavor to begin with. So it comes to us from both directions. So that's a part of why we are paying attention to Nedarim come the new year, come the Yemei HaDin, because we are concerned that maybe we would have created a problem for ourselves through a neder that we haven't lived up to. But that also creates the other half of the equation, that the public declaration of Kol Nidre, which one could see as undermining the commitment to Nedarim, is also a source of controversy. So there were some Rishonim who were against it. And then there's also a question, which is a somewhat of an ongoing question, as to what the focus of Kol Nidre is. Is Kol Nidre actually a Hataras Nedarim about the past, saying that we want to be given amnesty for whatever Nedarim that we've taken in the past? Or is it more a declaration, as Rabbeinu Tam understood, following the path of his father, who had changed the text to focus towards the future? So is it more a declaration about the future? And that itself, we have to try to understand a little bit. So somehow we have a concern about the Nedarim that brings us to certain practices around the time of Yemei HaDin, both the Hataras Nedarim and Kol Nidre Hanhagas, which are not explicitly associated with Yemei HaDin and Shas, but this has developed as the practice and apparently connected to a fear that we may have not lived up to our Nedarim. And also a part of that equation seems to be that you might think, well, listen, I would probably know if I took a Neder and I'm not in the habit of taking Nedarim, so how likely is it that I actually did get myself in the situation that I committed myself to something I didn't live up to? So a part of it is that we also assume that at least on some level, whether this is Minat Torah or not, it's a discussion, but at least on some level, I become committed to a behavior not just because I said so, but because I have taken on a practice and allowed it to become established as a pattern we call a Hanhaga Tova, that also creates an obligation, and therefore maybe I have a liability from that perspective. So we have developed this practice of having Heter Nedarim around this time. Should mention also, when we say that it's not explicit in Shas that there is, or in any sense of the word, that there is a specific notion of doing so around the Yom Noraim, the question alluded to before of what is and isn't explicit in Heter Nedarim is itself an interesting topic. The Mishnah in Chagiga on Daf Yod, I think I had a chance to say it on the list, the Mishnah in Chagiga and Daf Yod, which tells us that the Heter Nedarim Parchim Ba'avir, that the whole notion of there being a concept of Hataras Nedarim is just floating in the air. It's not something that the Torah ever says explicitly. The Torah does explicitly discuss a different concept, related but significantly different, called Hafaras Nedarim. The idea that the Nedarim, either of a young girl or of a married woman, could be negated either by, respectively, her father or her husband. So that is more explicit in the Torah. And that's the beginning of Parshas Matos, where the Torah tells us that there is a binding nature to Nedarim, Lo Yachal Devaro, and there is this concept of Hafaras Nedarim, and somewhere in between we have to figure out that Hataras Nedarim exists too. And Chazal have the diuk that the language of lo yachel devaro, that one should not make chulin, should not profane his own words. So the emphasis on devaro of al acherim meichon oso, that maybe he can't do it himself, but others can. And that's interesting to speculate and to try to, it's always kedai, to try to pay extra attention to the drashos of Chazal and what they are seeing in the language of the Torah. So it seems like what's being taught here is that there is a particular focus that even if there's justification for a neder to be canceled, but still it shouldn't be by the individual himself, that there should be a commitment that comes from the fact that you are loyal to your word, and that if it's appropriate, it's not always appropriate, but if it's appropriate for a neder to be canceled, so then an external body should do that. And to emphasize that point, that we find that this may apply even to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Right? So the idea of going to a chacham, for example, to be mater and nether, it's not because he's smarter than you, but it maybe has to do with this aspect of it has to be somebody else, illustrated by the fact that we find notions in Chazal of a Kadosh Baruch Hu seeking Hataras Nedarim for his commitments. So clearly he's not going to any kind of superior Chacham, but it maybe emphasizes this idea that the commitment of the Neder is one's personal commitment, and that even when it's appropriate for it to be undone, there should be some kind of external undoing. And one of the references is based on the Kriyas HaTorah that we just had last week, the Kriyas HaTorah for Tzom Gedalia, for Tainas Tzibur, where we read Vayichal, and that's from Parshas Kisisa, and there are some suggestions in the literature that Vayichal is also from the Lashon of Lo Yachal Devaro, that Moshe was given the role of being Matir HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Neder, so to speak, after the Chet HaEgel. So this notion that Heter Nedarim should come from somewhere else, maybe that's what Chazal were emphasizing in this drasha. But as the Mishnah tells us, the dinim and the concept itself of Hataras Nedarim is not explicit in the Chumash, and we need a whole Masorah of Taras Sheval Peh to even tell us that the concept exists. So in any event, so we take our Nedarim very seriously, and it creates a certain pachad around the Yimei HaDin. And the idea of doing it before Rosh Hashanah, before getting into more about Kol Nidre, or maybe together with that, so the Magen Avraham quotes an idea from the Shla that maybe we are fulfilling an idea that the Gemara has in Masechet Nedarim on Daf Chav Gimel, which is close to connecting it to the Yimei HaDin, that the Gemara there says that if somebody wants to make sure that he's not going to get in trouble with Nedarim in the future, so he should get up and make a declaration that all of his Nedarim that he's going to take should not be binding. It should give a Mesiras Moda. And that declaration should be done on Rosh Hashanah. So the notion of associating with the beginning of the year specifically, perhaps that's the idea, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur time, beginning of the year. So one possible understanding is that Kol Nidre fulfills that role. And that's, again, Rabbeinu Tam's perspective, that the language should be forward-focusing, that we are talking about the Nedarim that are upcoming. And then the idea is that maybe we're concerned that we're not going to fully accomplish this with the whole public recitation together with everyone else in Kol Nidre, so therefore we also try to do it individually. And so once we're doing it individually, okay, so let's get the beginning of the year. So the idea of Hataras Nedarim before Rosh Hashanah together with Kol Nidre may be towards that goal. Now it actually emphasizes a little bit part of the question about Kol Nidre, because that same Gemara also says that this is something that shouldn't be publicized to other than Talmidei Chachamim, because it could lead to people not taking Nedarim seriously. So the idea that we do incorporate it into the public behavior and the public display on Yom Kippur is half explained and half made more surprising by this idea. So the idea that it becomes such a public and such a highlighted event, we call it Kol Nidre Night, maybe the question becomes stronger at the same time as it's a little bit explained by that Gemara. So far, so good? Okay, but let's assume that that has something to do with the fact that we do Hataras Nedarim before Rosh Hashanah, or many of us do, that everyone had taken on this practice. It has pluses and minuses, as we see, because, again, we don't want somebody to undervalue the idea of Hataras Nedarim, and there were those who felt that if you have a real concern that there might be a neder obligation that you have, even in an unspoken neder, but a hanhaga tova that may have created a certain commitment, so then for sure you should try to address that before Rosh Hashanah, so you shouldn't come with that on your account. But to just do it kind of glibly and just assume, okay, we'll just do it as a matter of routine, that maybe that is more harmful than positive. So there was such a concern. There are some who indeed do not do this for that reason. But there is a widespread practice to not worry about that as much and to worry more broadly and to take on Hetaras Nedarim as a kind of general safeguard before Rosh Hashanah, and if not then, before Yom Kippur. Hi.
I mean, maybe we're going to get into this, but I'm wondering how Kol Nidre and, I guess, the Hadaras Nedarim formula that we use before Rosh Hashanah is even effective, because it seems even according to the most lenient opinion that we looked at, you still need to give some general description of what the Nedar is.
Yes, so that is a big problem. So certainly Hadaras Nedarim should require Pirut normally. It's a discussion whether that's an obligation min HaTorah midrabanan. Again, the whole area is a little hard to define because the Torah is not explicit b'chlal about HaTorah Nedarim, but still, Torah Shabbat Peh assumes that there is a din min HaTorah that we're deriving of HaTorah Nedarim, which has other ramifications we'll see in a second. Whether the din of Pirut HaNeder is specifically min HaTorah or not is a discussion, and it may be that even if it's drabanan, it still affects on a deraisa level the effectiveness of Hataras Nedarim. So you're right. So certainly, if somebody really does have a din that really does have a neder that they can identify, so they certainly should spell it out. And that's been the practice. And, Sefer Bat Yosef we'll refer to in a couple times in the next few minutes, that we released from the yeshiva last week. So there it mentioned that Rav Soloveitchik was particularly makbid on that, which again I understand, because it seems to be a maker adin, that if you know that you have an actual nether, so you certainly should spell it out. So the question is just, if you don't know what it is, and the Sidurim has printed the Nusach, that it's too many of them, which is an interesting focus, but the Kirabim Hemi, Efshar Lefartam, the language has something like that, which is not necessarily the only reason, maybe we don't remember anything at all, but one way or another, that's printed into our Nusach, that we wish we should be able to specify them, but because we can't, so we're doing the best that we can. Now, that's also important to keep in mind. It's also interesting that we have a common practice of doing Heter Nedarim on Erev Rosh Hashanah in groups. Many stand together and do the Hataras Nedarim in front of the Beis Din. And that really works. That's not a problem. That works even for regular Hataras Nedarim. If you have a few people who, this is Preferish and Shulchan Aruch, that you can have a group of people do Hataras Nedarim at once. The question of just making sure the Nusach matches, so the Beis Din speaks to the Rabbim rather than the individual. But Meikar HaDin, that's not a problem. But, you know, there were those who were machmir to do it one-on-one for whatever reason. Maybe also they were concerned that Tetrei Kolei L'Mishtamai, they wouldn't be heard if they were talking at the same time as someone else. Some suggest that maybe the whole idea of doing Hataras Nedarim separate from Kol Nidre is because we want to really make sure you're saying it specifically and you're not just listening to somebody else, especially because the idea seems to be connected to the notion of Asi Dibur Mavatal Dibur, that if you want to cancel a spoken nether, so then you need a spoken Hatara in order to cancel that. And all the more so, okay, we should be careful to make sure you're saying it. So that's an objection some raise to the otherwise acceptable practice of having many people saying it once. I heard someone pointed out that maybe it's good that we have this group presentation, Badavka, because we kind of want to remind you that if you have a real neder, so then you have to be addressing that specifically. And you should understand that this is more of just a practice on top of that. And if we're specifically having the larger groups saying it is maybe a way to remind yourself of that. Make sure I would emphasize that this is just kind of a chumrah on top of the practice, but this doesn't really replace a actual specific Hataras Nedarim if that's something that you're able to do. So there are a number of aspects that need to be figured out about how exactly Hataras Nedarim should be conceptualized, because as a practice, it doesn't seem like it is a din process to address all of its details. On the one hand, it requires a Beis Din, but the nature of the Beis Din is a little bit complex. And as you got to see, if you saw the Makoros, there are a number of points that are explicit in Shulchan Aruch that differ from a din process. So when it comes to a Heter Nedarim Beis Din, so you can do it at night. You can probably do it even on Shabbos. We don't see that happening so much, but you could do it at night. You could do it with a Dayanim standing, which again is not where we normally stand. It's not our practice, but theoretically, the Dayanim could be standing. In an actual Din Torah, the Dayanim sit. The Dayanim could be Krovim. That's also explicit in Shulchan Aruch. It's a question what that means. In the Bate Yosef, Rav Schechter is noting that he thinks that means that the Krovim, a person who's coming to the Beis Din, he can be related to a Dayan on the Beis Din. But the Dayanim themselves should not include, the three Dayanim who are sitting on the Beis Din should not include Krovim. So why is that? Because, so is it like a normal Beis Din or is it not like a normal Beis Din? So on a normal Beis Din, you don't want the Dayanim to be related to each other or to the litigants. Here, they can be related to the people coming before the Beis Din because it's not an actual process of Din, but we still want the Tzura of a Beis Din. So we want the Beis Din to be a Beis Din that would be kosher in a different context. So therefore, he's adding on that the Krovim Nekuda is about being related to the applicant, but between themselves, the Dayanim should not be related to each other, because that would create a Beis Din that would be possible in a different context, and so too shouldn't include an Isha, because that's a issue with the Tzura of the Beis Din. It also brings up a couple of other questions about the qualifications. So first of all, so the Dayanim should be adults, they shouldn't be Ketanim, but also the question of how clearly they have to be adults. So the notion that we rely on a bar mitzvah boy being 13, being considered an adult, that's really a presumption midrabanan. That's what the Gemara in Nidah calls chazaka deraba, that we assume that once a boy turns 13, he's probably in full physical maturity and halachically an adult. But many assume that we rely on that only for dinam derabanan. But for dinam d'araisa, so then we require more clear symbols of physical maturity. So that's why, for example, the discussion comes up whether bar mitzvah boys should lay in parshas zachar or not, if you assume parshas zachar is minat Torah. So for that reason, since hataras nedarim is presumably minat Torah, and affects dinam minat Torah for sure, affects the concept of our nedarim, so therefore the dayanim should be clearly adults and shouldn't be recent bar mitzvah boys. So that actually was brought up in the context of another issue that relates to the whole question of the makeup of the Beis Din and of the functioning of the Beis Din. So one of the requirements of Beis Din in general is that we're not supposed to have an even number of dayanim. We're not supposed to have what's called a Beis Din shakel. Even Beis Din, that we're supposed to have a Beis Din nota, meaning a leaning Beis Din, meaning that it has an odd number of Dayanim, so if they have to vote on something, it'll be clear where there's a majority. It's not going to be tied up in a tie vote. So what about Hataras Nedarim? So can you have a Beis Din shakel for Hataras Nedarim? So just on the surface, you see how it's a little bit connected to this question of how to look at the Beis Din. Right, so if we're seeing that it's not an actual Beis Din process, so therefore it doesn't have to follow all the rules of Beis Din. It can be at night and they can be standing, etc. But it has to have some rules of being a kosher Beis Din in its format. So where does the rule of even number of Dayanim fit in? So that's the whole discussion of the poskim. And it relates also to this bar mitzvah boy question, because it was an interesting tshuva in the Tshuva Shabbat Kiva Eger, where he discussed that somebody had asked him, there was a small town and somebody had an actual neder that he was aware of that he wanted to have undone, but he wasn't comfortable telling any of his peers about this neder. So a small town, it wasn't easy for him to find three adult dayanim that he was comfortable revealing this din to. And the only person who he wasn't afraid to talk to was a 14-year-old boy. So Rabbi Akiva Eger suggested, he said, so have four on the Beis Din, and you'll have three clear adults, and you'll also have this recent bar mitzvah boy, and you don't have to spell out the neder to everybody in the Beis Din. You can spell it out to one person. So tell him the neder, that'll be the Pirata neder, and the Beis Din will also include the three others. So that's an interesting discussion all tied to this detail. But it seems to be that he's not worried about a Beis Din Shakal. It seems to be that he doesn't care that they're going to be four Dayanim. And our namesake, Yerub Yitzchak Ochanan, and the Nachal Yitzchak, so he objected to that. He thought that you have to have the Tzura of a Beis Din, which means no even-numbered Dayanim. So that was the whole discussion as to how that detail plays in. And it also connects to other issues, because in some circles, in Sephardi circles, I believe, to a certain extent, and Chabad also, they actually have a Kpeda to have 10 Dayanim. So the idea of having 10 Dayanim maybe relates to issues of Chayrim, things like that, that in order to be cleared of a Chayrim, so you need a minion. So then that prompts the issue of, that's an even number, so is that a problem to have 10 Dayanim? So that was a big discussion. There were some who thought that you'd be choshish to both by having 11, they're going to have more than 10, have at least 10 for the purpose of being matel l'cheirim, and then have more in order to clear it of this even-numbered issue. So there's a lot of back and forth about that, and it goes to the question of really what's happening here. So is this some kind of quasi-din process that or something connected to din, even though they have these exceptions and these kulas, but basically it is a process of din? Or is it really not about din at all? And we know that in general, so we have different roles for Beis Din. Sometimes a Beis Din is convened in order to investigate something, and they have to actually adjudicate a matter. And there's also the concern that you have the possibility of a tie vote, because they're going to have different opinions among the Dayanim, and we have to have a way to decide. And sometimes Beis Din is required by halacha, not because they're actually going to vote on something and they're going to have potentially different opinions, but because they need to endorse something. And that endorsement on behalf of the tzibur requires a Beis Din. So when you have a Beis Din in the context of Geirus, you have a Beis Din in the context of other aspects of halacha, so sometimes it's one, sometimes it's another, and sometimes it's not clear whether they are investigating or whether they are essentially endorsing on behalf of the tzibur, on behalf of Klal Yisrael, what exactly is the story here. So that probably also affects this whole question of how the Beis Din is comprised and what exactly its requirements are. And there are some who suggest that maybe it also connects to another detail here, that when we talk about Hataras Nedarim, so we have actually two types of Hataras Nedarim. And this is a point that was discussed in the Shach, that we have the concept of Charata and the concept of Pesach. So Charata is the idea that you simply regret that you ever took a neder, you ever took this neder, you ever took the neder, and it made sense to you at the time, but now you regret it. So you'd like to have it canceled. While a Pesach is a more involved process, and a Pesach, pei tavchas, an opening, that it means that there was something that you didn't understand at the time. And that had you been aware, if we could create a hole, if we could create an opening in your initial assumption, that had you known that it was going to play out this way, had you known that this was going to be the result, you wouldn't have taken the neder in the first place. Now, there's some subtle distinctions here, that sometimes if it's clear as anything that it was a total mistake, if there is an obvious issue that shows that there would never have been a commitment in the first place had the facts been known, so that it may not even require that. It may not even require hatara. But that might be another level. So, for example, just we had Rosh Hashanah last week. So, without getting into all the details, there's a discussion in the Taz of, let's say, if Rosh Hashanah went into Shabbos, and you had a tzibur that lost their shofar, and they were mekabel Shabbos early, and then the shofar showed up, and now the question is, can they undo their Kabbalah Shabbos because they still want to blow shofar? So, it touches upon a lot of different issues, but the Taz in that discussion, he says, it's undone in and of itself. That was so clear that it was based on a mistake. It was based on a premise that's not true. So then that undoes it. But let's say it's somewhere in between. It's not glaringly obvious. But it could be posited that there was a mistaken impression, or there was something that the node there just didn't appreciate. So then that's where you have Pesach. Charata is, you just regret it now. So Charata and Pesach operate differently, and the Pesach is a more involved kind of process. And that's what the Shach writes, that it could be that a lot of the more stringent requirements would be true if we were talking about a Pesach. But when it comes to a Charata, which is generally how we're doing things nowadays, so that's also why we're able to be more lenient on a lot of the requirements. And some of the Svarim, they say that specifically the whole idea of Erev Rosh Hashanah, Taras Nadarim, is a Charata process, right? That's what we find in the Nusach, Kulam Bischaratna. So therefore, it also allows for a general approach of leniency, because the process of Charata is easier than the process of Pesach. Everybody with me? You guys on the Zoom? All doing well? So the question also of... Sorry, guys.
Does everyone agree with the Taz that even in the East case, that it would be on them?
With that, so that's a different Taz. Taz I mentioned before. Everyone agree? I think so. I think that you have to figure out what qualifies. You know, I was thinking if there's rumdana demuchach, if you have a situation where, again, there's a subjectivity in assessing what would qualify for that, so the devil will be in the details of knowing when that applies. But if there's a glaringly obvious mistake that anyone can look at and say, you never, no one would have taken a measure in this situation, it's probably true. But it's interesting because there's also a discussion. It's a whole other point, that there's a discussion in Hilchos B'nai Noach as to what exactly is the scope of a nether. So many assume, and there are many indications in Shas, that a Ben Noach is also obligated to keep his nedarim, even though it's not clear how that fits into the Shava Mitzvos, which one of the categories it is. It could be that it's just their misvara, and we understand that all of humanity appreciates that you're supposed to stick to your commitments. But there's a machlokus in the Gemara about the role of Hataras Nadarim for Bnei Noach. So does it mean it's two extremes? Either that there's no Hatara, that it's just always binding, or Ein Sarach Hatara. So then you have to figure out, what does that mean, Ein Sarach Hatara? So how could it be both? How could it be that there is a binding nature to Nadarim, but they don't need Hataras Nadarim? So if you don't need Hataras Nadarim, it means Nadarim aren't binding. Well, you know, what does that mean to say Ein Sarach Hatara? So it could be along these lines, that no, that let's say there is a very clear reyesa to the nether. The nether clearly only happened on a certain premise. So then maybe that undoes it by itself. And then the question is, when you get a little bit in the middle, when you need a process of hatara, so maybe that's more of a formality, and then there's a little discussion how exactly that plays in. So in any event, a lot to say about how this all affects our process on Erev Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Shatter also points out that the Torah Tumima says this also, that the idea, he points out from the Torah Tumima, he points out from Rav Baruch Epstein, who wrote this in one of his other Sfarim, but it's also in his Sefer Torah Tumima on the beginning of Parshas Matos, that Chazal note that because Hafara and Hatara are different processes, so you can't use the language of one for another. So the husband being matir, being mefir, his wife's nether, should not use the language of hataras nedarim, and a chacham being matir nether should not use the lashon of hafaras nedarim. So the Torah Tumima points out over there that it means, yes, it's a problem to use the language of the other, but it doesn't mean that we're necessarily tied in only to a specific language. So hataras nedarim, there could be other synonyms that work, just you shouldn't use the language of hafara, but other languages that mean the same thing as hatara could work. So what's the nafkamina for that? So a small nafkamina that for us in the Taras Nadarim, so it's printed in the Machzorim, you say, the Dayanim say, HaKol Mutarim Lecha, HaKol Mechurim Lecha, HaKol Shurim Lecha, something like that, and that you should say that three times. So the idea of saying something three times is a chizuk, is to support the concept, and that especially because Hetu Nadarim is so non-explicit, it's Parchim Ba'avir, so we want to emphasize it's a real thing, so we say it three times. But as the Torah Tumimah notes, you're saying it already three times, just in three different synonyms. So that counts as saying it three times. So the idea, what's printed in the Machzorim, that you should say this paragraph three times, the paragraph contains the three languages, it's a little redundant. It comes out to saying it nine times. You could have just said it with the three synonyms. That also counts as saying it three times. Okay, it's an interesting Ha'ara. But in any event, so what it sounds like is that there's some relationship between the Hataras Nadarim and the Kol Nidre of Yom Kippur night. Kol Nidre of Yom Kippur night is a more complex point and raises all the issues that we've mentioned, the issue of even if we're supposed to do Hataras Nadarim, why should we do it in public? And it creates a little bit of a Chil Hashem and an anti-Semitism problem, and maybe internally it creates a lack of reverence for Nadarim and Klapei Shmaya, you know, the idea that we're asking for God to trust us for another year, and by the way, our Nadarim are meaningless, seems also a little bit hard to relate to. So, in the interest of time, I'm going to have to wrap up in a second, but I'll just mention, so I published about this question, Alpi Derech HaDroshul, but maybe, you know, some various suggestions in a volume that we published in Yeshiva a few years ago called Mitoch Ohel on the Tfilas of Yantif. There's a chapter there about Kol Nidre. Also spoke about it last year for the Strauss Center. It's available on YouTube. Mentioned some of the approaches there also. So those are a few marmakomos, if you want to look into it more length, just to mention maybe one or two ideas, and I apologize if you have to run out. But another idea that is, one idea that we could perhaps suggest is that maybe it's not so. Again, there are many, many different approaches, some al-pi derech hadrush, and some maybe taking on different styles to them. But just to mention one, the idea that it's embarrassing to say that our nadarim we fell short of and that we want to be released, and that we also plan on saying that about next year's Nadarim, and that we're going to come back every year and make the same declaration. At the same time, we're saying, God, please trust us and give us another year. So I thought perhaps you could explain, to draw from a widely publicized drasha that Rabbi Lam, Zichron Lebracha, gave many years ago, where he talked about, it's called the royal reach, and the idea that we should always be striving for greater heights, for more than we seem to be capable of. And if we internalize that idea that we are looking to always push ourselves further and further. So the statement that we're making with Kol Nidre is that we're saying that, yes, it's true that we fell short of what we committed to this past year, and we plan on saying that again next year, but it's for a good reason. It's not embarrassing. It's because we committed to try to do more than we were capable of. That's the nature of our striving. That's the royal reach. And it would be embarrassing if we had accomplished everything we set out to do, because then we'd be saying that we're really aiming too low. So we're proud of the fact that we aimed high and that we tried to accomplish a lot and we took on big commitments, but it means by necessity that we're going to fall short. And we expect Yemirtz Hashem to be saying the same thing a year from now, to be saying that we're going to set high goals for this year. And that's a part of success, that sometimes if you aim high, you'll get at least close to that. So that's our goal for the upcoming year, to aim as high as we can and try to accomplish as much of that as we can. But because we're aiming high, so in the melee we're going to fall a little bit short, and that's a good thing. It reflects aspirations. And we expect to be coming here a year from now again and saying, please forgive us for what we did not accomplish in our commitments, and please understand that that is going to be a constant theme, but it's going to reflect this royal reach that we also hope to accomplish more and more. So we'll close here for today.